Joined now by Senator Marco Rubio. Senator, welcome. Congratulations on Decades of Decadence. This is really quite the remarkable book. Did it drop today?
Yesterday.
All right. The reason I say it's remarkable, it is a comprehensive indictment of my generation's management of everything since the fall of the Berlin Wall. It begins with Francis Fukuyama, and it ends up with Jacques Derrida. And I mean, that we didn't do anything right. My people did nothing right, Senator Rubio, and you've got the receipts.
Well, look, I mean, I think to be fair, right? I mean, there's been periods of time in American history where you have to make these decisions. And these decisions that were made after the Cold War, it's not your fault, Hugh, just so you know.
I actually believe Fukuyama. I bought it. I read it. Yeah. I'm a Straussian. I wholly thought the march of liberal democracy could not be impeded, Senator, and I was wrong.
Well, I think that had to be balanced. The problem is this, and it's a lesson moving forward. That's why history is so important, right? The lesson moving forward is that things like nation state will always matter, and the national interest will always matter, and place will always matter. So the decision was made that, okay, you know, the conflicts between nation states are never going to happen again because everyone's going to be making money together and they have no interest in going to war. Well, that totally ignores that World War II was fought between countries that had extensive trade with one another right up until the bombs started dropping. So it is important to understand that. But on that basis, we forgot very important things. Like, I believe in the free market 100%. I mean, I think it's the single greatest poverty eradicator in human history. However, from time to time, the free market outcome is not in our national interest. So as an example, the free market says we should make things in China because it's cheaper there. And the prices will be lower, and the companies making it will make more money. Costs are lower. That's the free market outcome. The problem is it's not in America's interest to make all these things in China, A, because it leaves people unemployed in the United States, and B, because it leaves us dependent. And so what happens when you have to make that decision? And, you know, Reagan, you know, people forget, but Reagan had a very big test at the time when Japan was about to basically dominate the world computing market, and he had to make a decision about what he would allow and not allow to happen in the United States. And had Reagan not taken some of the steps he did, which benefited many other countries in Asia as he diversified our supply chains on that, personal computing may never have been an American core business that it became. So, you know, that was a mistake, obviously. The second mistake was the belief that, as I said, nation-state conflict would go away. China obviously didn't get the memo. Russia obviously didn't get the memo. Iran didn't get the memo. North Korea didn't get the memo. Nation state does matter. And then the third, which is part of this decadence, is the belief of we've now made it. We have no opponent in the world. We're a unipolar power. So now we have the luxury of engaging in lunacy, like, you know, pretending things that are true aren't true anymore, that gender is no longer a real thing, that family is no longer important, that parenting is no longer relevant. Somehow our kids can be raised online as opposed to by stable homes. So these were big mistakes. We got away with it for a while because we had a lot of built-in credit, you know, we had a lot of surplus, but we spent right through it, and now we are paying the price.
Yeah, the peace dividend never existed, but we declared it anyway. And in Decades of Decadence, Senator Rubio lays out that probably the inflection point where it went from being bad policy to terrible policy was China's admission to the WTO. I believe even the appeasers of China today that are still on Wall Street, as you point out, in great numbers, we'll recognize that admission to the WTO, where they made all these promises, not one of which they have kept, was a disaster. Senator, before I go to the march of the cultural Marxists through the institutions, and by the way, I compliment you on a comprehensive takedown of this, I do want to ask you a question about the indictment of former President Trump based on your service on the Intel Committee. When do you think this will go to trial? The 31 documents are at the heart of this. I don't know how they try this without declassifying those documents or clearing the jurors to see them.
Oh, no, they'll have to do that. So first of all, they'll have, you know, there's a real question, fundamental question here. Let me start out this morning by saying something I find outrageous, and that is there is now a concerted effort to begin attacking the judge. The judge in this case, Eileen Cannon, is an American success story. She was born to a Cuban mom, worked hard, graduated very high in undergrad, went to law school at the University of Michigan, graduated with great marks there, served our country as a U.S. attorney, served in private practice. I mean, we had to convince her. She's the person I had to go to and say, you should be a judge. We need more people like you on the bench. And walked away, you know, from a much, you know, more comfortable financial life to be willing to do that. She's everything you want to see in a jurist in America. And she's just being now, it's just a drip, constant attack against her and so forth. It's interesting. You can't say anything about the special counsel or the fact that his wife was the producer of a Michelle Obama documentary, but they are going to town on this judge, and it's outrageous. The second thing I'd say is Trump now has to find a lawyer who is admitted to the Florida, to the Southern District of Florida, who's competent, who works somewhere that allows him to do it, because most of these big firms, their clients will go crazy if they're representing Trump, and who can be cleared, because you got to be cleared for this intelligence information. And then you got to share it with jurors who also have to, they won't be given clearance, but they'll be given, you know, one-time clearance to see these documents and trials. So it's really complex when you do these national security trials. And I don't know when it'll go to trial, but it isn't going to be next week, next month, or even I would argue at this time next year, we're probably still, these things take time to roll out. Again, I'm not a, never practiced in that court, so I'm not a federal court expert in that regard, but I can't imagine this thing moving quickly.
You have the clearances that are required for TSA SAP. I held them once. Andy McCarthy held them once and prosecuted trial. It took 18 months to try the blank shake because of these classified material document issues. I think we're looking at that. So we're looking at necessary interference with the election. My second question, have you ever removed a classified document from the Senate skiff as apparently the president of the United States did when he was a senator?
Well, and that's a misconception, okay? Skiffs are designed to protect against electronic collection, okay? So it's not the skiff, because you can review documents outside of a skiff. What happens is they have to be secure, right? They travel in a pouch and that goes back to a safe. The documents have to be stored in a secure place. So let me say this at the outset. Those documents don't belong at Mar-a-Lago. They didn't belong in Joe Biden's garage. They don't belong on Hillary Clinton's server. They don't belong anywhere. They don't belong in these places. Now, prosecutions are a choice. There's something called prosecutorial discretion. For example, people that burned down federal buildings and rioted in the District of Columbia, the prosecutors here decided not to prosecute those people. And that happened at the state level across the country as well. So prosecutor looks at this and says, okay, what is the harm to national security? Because there is no allegation in this indictment that there was harm to the national security. There is no allegation that it was turned over to a foreign power or shown to a foreign power. In fact, these media leaks from the intelligence community have actually been worse than anything that's alleged in this indictment in terms of damage to the country. So no damage to national interest. On the other hand, there is significant damage already from bringing this indictment. This is already a polarized and divided country, and now we have this, and now we'll have attacks on the DOJ, attacks on the FBI, attacks on the judge, not to mention, you know, the divisiveness that this injects into our politics. A prosecutor looks at that and says, okay, this is not worth subjecting our country to, like they've decided not to deport people, prosecutorial discretion that ICE is using in the courts. But instead, they were given a mandate, which is go get this guy. Get him at all costs, no matter what the price is to the country, because we need to make sure that we disqualify. And I don't think they're done. I still think.
Oh, I don't either, Senator. And I think the DOJ and the FBI have painted themselves blue. And I don't want a red. I don't want a blue DOJ. I want a beige DOJ. And my question, do you think these tapes exist that Chuck Grassley said exist? Two phone calls between the then Vice President Biden and Burisma executives? We haven't gotten a clear answer, but what do you think?
Well, I don't know. I have no basis to know whether they exist or not. Here's what I do know, and this is why people need to understand. Okay, what happened here is a source went to the FBI and made these allegations, and there is now a whistleblower. Okay, because look, the FBI gets allegations every day. You don't want those things out in the public square because you can accuse anybody of anything and ruin their lives. But we have a whistleblower, and this whistleblower came forward and told Chuck Grassley the FBI got these allegations and did nothing about it, didn't even try to find out if this was true, if there were tapes. They did nothing, unlike the fake dossier that they spent us 3 years chasing, okay? So the allegation is the FBI did nothing about these claims. So right now, the question is, did the FBI, it's not whether the tapes even exist, is did the FBI even try to find out if they exist? Did the FBI even try to find out if these allegations were true? Because the whistleblower says they did not. And if they didn't, why not? Why would you not pursue something like this? And who gave you the order not to? That is the question before us right now, is whether the FBI followed up on this or did not follow up on this. And if the answer is they didn't, as I suspect is the case, then we got a big problem. Because I think now you have to ask yourself, why would you have more decadence?
I want to go back to decades of decadence before we lose the thread. We're going to go to break and come back. The march through the institutions that you talk about, which is real, and you talk about it bluntly. We have 1 minute. Do you think it's in the FBI, too?
Well, look, I think at the end of the day, every agency in American government is populated by people that came through our higher education system. Now, I believe that the overwhelming, from my interactions, the overwhelming majority of people that work at the FBI who this morning are in the field offices across our country chasing terrorists and Chinese spies are not into all this stuff. But when you talk about the upper echelons of the leadership of any government bureaucracy, it's populated with people who are a product of our higher education institutions that have spent 30 years teaching young Americans that this is the worst country in the world. And that it needs to be systemically reformed and abandoning all the things that made it great. And so
when we come back, we're going to talk about the decades of decadence. I really urge you to go get it. It's a cri de coeur. It's unlike any book that's been written by a senator that I've ever read, because it's a comprehensive view of 40 years and what happened. And it's like the least politicized view, but it's so shocking because it's so blunt. We'll talk about it. Decades of Decadence, when we return with Senator Rubio. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by Senator Marco Rubio, whose brand new book, Decades of Decadence, is in bookstores today, available at Amazon. I put the link over at Twitter. Senator, on page 172, you write, "The divide between people who live in this country and want it to prosper and those who see the U.S. as fundamentally racist, sexist nation that must be radically changed or dismantled if it wants it to survive, that's the key difference." And you go on to expand when this began, this difference began. I don't know how we end it. And Decades of Decadence says we've got to end it, but how do we end it?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to understand that divide. What's really important about it is that even though the group of people who believe this country is inherently evil and needs to be dismantled and restructured is small, or the minority, they're a very powerful minority. They happen to be CEOs, and they run media, and they're at the top of government agencies, and they control academia for a long time. And it really began when it was a lab leak from academia. Okay, it was a virus that existed in higher education that got outside of the lab and has now infected the population, or at least infected all of our major institutions. And I think the way we begin to stop it is standing up against it at every level. And that's why history is so important. You know, the French Revolution is a great guide. The French Revolution that began in many ways on, you know, strong principles evolved into a hysteria that they wound up running out of people to guillotine. And so that's where we're headed here as well. It's become a hysteria, and people are learning the hard way that they won't stop. There's no institution or individual, no matter how woke you are, eventually they'll come for you. Look at the other day what happened at the White House. You know, Joe Biden decides to have this pride event, and then you've got this social media influencer, a man who's transitioned to being a woman and so forth, going topless and bragging about it. And, you know, it's an embarrassment, right? And to the country, it's distasteful, no matter who it was. So it's what happens when you begin to allow this thing to continue. It will not stop. It's a virus that will keep spreading until, you know, we stop it.
Oh,
so I think it really begins by calling it out for what it is.
Now, in Decades of Decadence, you write that we now call these things grievance studies, and we call it the successor ideology. And it all boils down to, in the term of art used by the left, opposition to Eurocentric cis-heteronormative patriarchy. Now, that does include pretty much the culture of grievance. It's absurd. I think most of America thinks it's absolutely absurd. But can the Republican Party reconstitute itself into dealing with this central ideological challenge at home while it deals with an aggressive Chinese Communist Party and General Secretary Xi abroad?
Well, and they're interrelated. I mean, just put yourself for a moment, if you can, in the position of some high-ranking official in Beijing watching what America is doing to itself. And they're thinking, look, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing. These guys are doing a great job of dismantling themselves internally. I mean, you look at the social media pages of our military. I mean, they've turned our aircraft carriers into cruise ships, you know, where they're having, you know, drag night and gay poetry readings. And look, I don't care what adults do. I don't care what adults decide to do in the privacy of their lives and so forth. But you can't turn our institutions to a platform for hysteria on either side. I don't think we should have heterosexual night either. Their job there is to defend us against our enemies, not focus on this lunacy. And so it just continues to spread. And you're right. I mean, it is a rejection of the following: two-parent families, and not only is it a rejection of two-parent families, of traditional marriages, this is not tolerance of alternatives to these things. It is intolerance towards anything that's traditional, that 5,500 years of culture and recorded human history have built up, that we inherit from Western civilization. And the argument that these things are not just bad, that they're evil, they're destructive, they're racist, they're bigoted, they're discriminatory. And so we've gone from an argument of tolerance to a push for intolerance against everything that has been, that basically humankind and common sense has told us works.
You know, Senator, if we had elections on the debate about the issues at the heart of this divide, Republicans would win them all. I think Donald Trump's presence in the election is going to obscure that fundamental debate. Do you for a moment worry that the Department of Justice is incentivized to get people to look away from an open border, from transitioning children at the age of 10, from all of the lunacy by throwing Trump into the middle of this with an indictment?
Well, I think clearly what's happened now is there are no guardrails left. If you watch basically the entire American media landscape, there is no penalty to be paid for going overboard on Donald Trump. In fact, it's celebrated, right? It's being celebrated on every network. The commentators are giddy. In some ways, I think that's a good thing, right? Because we used to pretend, okay, you know, that journalist, you know, they don't like us. They're probably biased, but they're fair. You know, they'll give us a fair shot. And if the other side does something really bad, they'll report on that too. Now there's no pretending. I mean, I think that's the one thing Donald Trump has done is unmask that reality, is that that these people are absolutely have an agenda, and they don't feel they need to hide it. They don't feel they need to hide it. Look, the president of CNN lost his job because he hosted a town hall with the leading presidential candidate on the Republican side at the moment. I mean,
it's like Senator Cotton's op-ed in the New York Times, which you write about. A single event brings a meltdown that causes hierarchy changes.
It's unreal, and it's what we're living through. But we got to talk about it. We got to fight against it. We got to build alternatives to it. And I think eventually we win people to our side. Most Americans are not ideological. They just want to have a job, raise their families, and retire with dignity. And we need to show them the path towards that.
And that argument is in Decades of Decadence by Senator Marco Rubio. It is a bestseller. It deserves to be a bestseller. Congratulations, Senator. Unlike any book by a senator I've read before, Decades of Decadence. Thank you, Senator Rubio. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Jacob. Thank you, Generalissimo. I'll be back tomorrow from Studio North on the next Hugh Hewitt Show.